My name is Randy Mackey. I know most of you here. And for those I don't, I'll meet over the next couple days. And I have the pleasure of being the first speaker. And I'll just keep this very short and very simple because, you're going to see these equations a lot today. But since I'm the first one, we can spend a little bit of time and talk about them. My approach to doing modeling and inversion has always been to come at it from the simplest way possible. And finite differences are very simple, a very simple approach to modeling partial differential equations. So that's where I've always spent my time developing a finite difference modeling codes. So here we go. Like, frequencies involved in MTX variations, these are Maxwell's equations. Curl of H is related to the current, and then the curl of the E field is I mu omega H, and in these equations we're ignoring the displacement current, so it's the usual approximation. We typically take the conductivity to be isotropic, but it can be easily generalized to anisotropic conductivity structure. So we'll come back to this, but let's just go on. So basically, I like to deal with the integral forms of Maxwell's equations. This is, from my perspective, it just seems a little bit more intuitive when you're deriving finite difference equations, but you could just as easily start from the differential forms. So the idea here is then, if you break up the Earth that you're trying to model into cubes, rectangular cubes, like this, then the way you have to define where the electric and magnetic fields, how they're defined on that geometry. So the way I've done it is I define the magnetic fields as averages along what do you call these?
Edges.
The edges, thank you. The edges. Off to a good start. And the electric fields are defined, I've defined them as an average electric field across the face of a cube. So you can kind of see, if you take the curl of the magnetic field, and that's just very simply the curl around that face, so it's sort of the magnetic field here times the length, and you just kind of do that all the way around, and then that's related to the electric field that crosses that face. And similarly for the curl of the electric field, is then related to the magnetic field along that edge. So then it's very simple to write down. You can just immediately write down finite difference equations given that. And they look like this, just for example. So the electric current, this is the electric current, and then the area of the face over which that electric current is defined, and then that's just the curl of the magnetic field. And then a similar equation for the curl of the electric field is related to I mu omega times the magnetic field. So it's very simple, and you can do that. This is in one direction, but you can do that for all three directions, the x direction, the y direction, and the z direction. Oops, one more equation. So then there's one little tricky thing in all this, and that's the electric field, which is defined across the face. As you know, the normal electric field will suffer a discontinuity if there's a change in the conductivity across that face. So I just define the electric field as an average of the electric field on either side. That's sort of a very standard approach. So you have all these equations, and then you can eliminate either the electric field or you can eliminate the magnetic field, and you come up with a second order system of equations in either the electric field or the magnetic field, and you wind up with a system, a linear system of equations, where either the electric fields or the magnetic fields are unknowns. You solve it. In my case, I've always dealt with magnetic fields, so I eliminate the electric fields from the equations. I get a system of equations, second order in H. You solve for the magnetic fields everywhere in the model, and then from that, you can, just the curl of magnetic field, you can get the electric fields. So your source terms, any boundary conditions and source go over here on the right-hand side. Okay, so I want to come back to Maxwell's equations again because anyone who's done this knows, well, one of the problems is, okay, one of the problems in 3D modeling is always associated with air layers. And why is that? It's because, well, in air, the conductivity is zero, or close to zero. It's very low. The resistivity is very high. So what happens when you have that? You see these equations become decoupled, or close to decoupled. But even if you assign a finite resistivity to the air, it still leads to a close decoupling of the two equations. So you need some additional information to solve it. You can solve it, but there's people who try to do this know it's a very ill-conditioned system and they're very tough to solve. The other, and you get a similar thing at low frequencies too, where the right-hand side of here goes to zero and the two equations become decoupled. So that indeterminacy can be removed. There's different ways to do that. You can either alternate divergence H updates, so that's the extra piece of information you need, is like the divergence of the magnetic field. If you have an electric field code, like you'll hear in an upcoming talk, you can add in the divergence of the electric field information. Or you can add that directly into the equations. That's another approach. You can directly add the divergence of H information into the equations you're solving as an additional piece of information that you need to do that. Okay, so I solved those equations. For big 3D models, it's difficult to solve those by a direct solution, but if you have a big cluster, you can do that. But typically, that's done by some sort of a conjugate gradient technique, an iterative technique. So I currently like to use biconjugate gradient stabilized. It seems to work well. Other people, you know, there's you know, a whole list of different types of conjugate gradient algorithms you can use. I use a preconditioner, which is the incomplete LU decomposition of the diagonal subblocks of that system matrix. Okay, so one of the key issues when you design these finite difference solutions is the meshing. You know, and I think that's probably something we're going to talk about in this conference, is how do you come up with meshes that will allow you to get accurate solutions. So these are just some rules that I try to use when I design meshes for the 3D model. I like to take in the surface layer to be about a tenth or maybe a fifth of the skin depth at the shortest period in the most conductive block, for example. That way you know you're going to get enough node points vertically to represent those fields. And then you can increase the thickness of each layer a little, not too much, until you get to bigger blocks of depth. Horizontally, there's a bunch of things I say here, but the thing I like to keep in mind is that you should make the block widths as uniform as possible. The finite difference solutions are most accurate when everything's nice and uniform. If you have a lot of variation, then the approximations to the derivatives aren't as accurate. But, you know, you can vary the block widths, and as you get out towards the boundaries, you can increase the block widths by a factor of 1.5 to 1.2 to 1.5. Okay, so this is just an example. This was this is a horizontal slice of the Ford model that I ran for this workshop. This is the resistive body, this is the conductive body. But you see, I have a nice uniform mesh, and only at the edges. Well, I chop it off here, so it actually goes out this way. But the blocks increase this way, and they also increase this way. And vertically, it's a similar thing. This is not the bottom of the model. This is the bottom where I'm don't even know how good these 3D solutions are, right? There's no 3D analytical solution that I know of. But at a few years ago at the Salt Lake City workshop, there are some simple things you can do, right? You can compare them against 1D solutions. You can compare them against 2D solutions. You can compare them against other 3D solutions, which is what we'll be doing here. Or you can even compare them against the analytical 2D solution. This is the Weaver analytical model. And I did this a few years ago, and you know, of course, my code hits it perfectly. I mean, what can I say? So anyway, we'll move on. Now, I work for a commercial company now, and so we're dealing with huge models and large amounts of data. So we have clusters we run things on these days. It's fairly fast, and whether it's on a desktop or a parallel cluster, and even these days on your desktop, you can get a parallel machine. You know, I have a desktop that has a quad core CPU. You can get one that has 4 of those, and so you have a 16-core parallel cluster on your desktop. So, anyway, they run pretty fast. So that's all for my introduction. Any more questions? No? Oh, good. Yeah, good point. Thank you. For my code, I use 2D boundary conditions. So I kind of take a rough look at the model and see if the boundaries, either TM or TE mode boundary conditions, depending on what the geological structure is. And then you put them far enough away, you know, that's why you grade the model out. So, you know, there's going to be some inaccuracy there, but I don't think it's using 2D boundary conditions seems to work really well. On the bottom, I use an impedance condition, or you could use a uniform field condition. And then at the top, it's a uniform magnetic field at the top of the air layers.
I've seen a number of even 2D these days where you've got strong structure based on the model, which means the model's not being modeled deep. That's something to keep in mind if you have a uniform field condition used on the base.
Boundary conditions. So I take like on the edges, on the edges, I'll do a 2D solution and then assign the 2D fields on all edges, and then I'll interpolate those through the model as a starting point. Yeah. The 2D, you want to know how I set the 2D boundary conditions. Is that what you're asking?
For 3D modeling,
yeah.
You use 2D.
Correct. The 2D model uses an impedance condition at the boundaries. The 2D solution? Oh no, that's fast. That's fast. That's trivial amount of time.
On your simulation, is 70 nodes? Is that 2 cores per node?
That's our old cluster. Those are 72 processors.
So did you distribute?
Like 36.
The solution of the parallelization over the solver, or did you distribute it over the data space?
It's over the. It's the coefficient matrix that A and the vectors are all distributed over all the processes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In this mode, you recommend to use very regular meshes. Right?
I recommend to use concern when it's down at depth. But finite difference solutions are most accurate when the grids are uniform. So if you can get a discretization that's good enough for the model, that's preferable. But of course, when you're doing an inversion, you don't often know ahead of time. So that's why it's good just to have a finite difference
type
model.
And the same for in depth.
Yeah, I like to as uniform as possible. I like as uniform as possible over the area that you're interested in modeling.
Is there a way of having a hybrid finite difference scheme so that your small grids that you have to have for the high frequencies of the surface don't have to penetrate your center view? Can you somehow have grids that expand in size?
You can actually, and I saw a paper a few years ago by some folks who were doing finite difference solution but around a borehole. And so the same idea, they wanted, so near it they wanted, you know, very fine model grids, but then away you can make it, so is there a board?
Yeah.